Anyway, so he has a piece on Sukkah over here. It's on page Taf Tzadi Zayin. Taf Tzadi Zayin. Thank you. It's Perek Tzadi Hes, 95. V'Yaakov nasa Sukkota, v'yibin lo bayit, u'nekneo asa Sukkot, al-ken kara shem ha-makom Sukkot. Well, we know that Sukkot is mentioned in the Torah by Yaakov Abinu. Yaakov traveled to a place called Sukkot. Sukkotah means El Sukkot. He built a house, and for his flock he built Sukkot. So Yaakov Abinu clearly was the first animal rights activist. He built a tent for his animals. Who cared in those days about the rights of animals and Matzal Bala Chaim? Alken kara shem ha-makom ahu Sukkot. So he called shem ha-makom Sukkot, he called the place Sukkot. Min hagam shel Yisrael Torah hi. The minhag of Yisrael is Torah. Ba'she'anu nuhagim bebo'enu lebatenu tekef la'al yitziyatna betekenet alim kippur. Right after Yom Kippur, we come home. Anu otzkim be'mitzvah Sukkah. Davka tekef v'miyad. So that's the minhag. We actually go right into the first mitzvah that's possible. Matzati ta'am agun b'derashot shel Rav Rabbi Shlomo Malcho. Rabbi Shlomo Malcho says, shekatav ta'am agun lama yisrael oskim davka mitzvah zu tekev achar Yom Kippur. Why do we build the sukkah right after Kippur? I mean, mamash, v'lo mitzvah acheret. If the whole goal is just to do a mitzvah right after Kippur, do any mitzvah. Why do they specifically do the sukkah? ופרש הרב נזכר להם דעניין הוא כך, לפי שציווה הקדוש ברוך הוא ביום הכיפורים שעיד אחד להשם ושעיד אחד לעזאזל. You talked about a lot, the two goats, one for השם, one for עזאזל. והכהן הגדול היה מתוודע על השעיד ששלח לעזאזל את כל עוונותם ופשעיהם. The כהן גדול puts his hands on the animal and he transfers all the sins of Klai Israel onto the head of the שעיד. כמו שאמר כתוב ונעשה שעיר עליו את כל עוונותם ובזה היה כפרה גדולה לישראל וכמעשה שהראו למותר יהושע בנים כנגדם איזה מצווה. Which means as a result of what our ancestors did, כמעשה שהראו למותר יהושע בנים כנגדם איזה מצווה, כי האבות הקדושים היה סימן לבניהם. Which means מעשה אבות סימן לבנים, which is whatever happens to the אבות what happened to the children. So the Sa'ir La'azazel is a result of something that happened to the Avot. Everything that happens in the world, you can always trace it back to something that happened in the lives of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. They're the template of Jewish history. Umad ketiv lema'ala ma'anyan v'yashuv Esav l'darko Se'ira. Amazing. Before Yaakov gets to Sukkot, what does the Pasuk say in the Torah? That Esav went back to his place in Se'ir. And then it says Yaakov went to Sukkot. So if those pesukim over there, Toda Rabba Semi, and those pesukim over there is the Maaseh Avot for Sa'ir Azazel and building a sukkah right after Sa'ir, because Kev Kippur. Ba'ad Ketim Yaakov Nasa Sukkota. Ba'ad Torah Lirmoz. Me'achar She'esav Shuaya Isa'ir. He's like the Yeter Ara, so to speak, Isa'ir. Nasa L'darko L'Sa'ir L'Tor Helko Mikorban Azeh Shil Azazel. So to speak, Esav goes to Sa'ir to take his chalik in the Sa'ir la'azazel. Yaakov nasa l'sukkot v'asak b'mitvah. So the name is in the Torah between the Sa'ir la'azazel and building a sukkah. Ab anachnu achar yom kippurim shishilachnu Sa'ir la'azazel. In our case, we sent it verbally by reading it in the machzor. Anu oskim b'mitvah sukkah davka v'lo b'shum mitvah achelet zu divrei pi hakam hen. This is the charming words of Rabbi Shlomo Malcho. ואני אוסיף בטעם לשמש, I'm going to add, כי זהו ידוע שהשטן ולילית והאומות שולטים עכשיו בעולם הזה מקטרגים תמיד על ישראל עם קדוש. The Satan and his wife, they're always being מקטרג on Klai Israel, ומבקשים תמיד להרע ולסד ישראל. And they're always interested in, you know, damaging Klai Israel. ודהי גימטי 480. But למד יוד, למד יוד טעף, equals 480. באשר שיש לה 480 מחנות שהם מקטרגים לישראל. Well, she has 480 legions, the army of, you know, prosecutors. She has a big law firm. וידוע לכל שביום הכיפורים אין לו שטן וליד שום שליטה על ישראל. אבל יום כיפור, like they called Hasatan, Hasatan is Gematria 364. To show us he only works 364 days. There's one day that he can't open his mouth. That's a Gemara. And what's the day that he can't work? On Kippur. On Kippur, Hasatan is silent. כמו שאומרו בצורת לכם לברכה, השטן גמטריה 364 ובשנה הוא 365 in the year 365 הוא רמז, השטן אין לו שליטה ביום הכיפורים. השטן has no שליטה על יום כיפור, כי אם 364 יום שהוא שאר ימות השנה, only the rest of the days of the year. וכנגד זה סיבה לנו הקדוש ברוך הוא בדבר סוכה, ולכן כתיב בחמישה עשר יום לעוד את השבעי, אז זה חג לזכות שבעת ימים להשם. סוכות כתיב חסר בב. If you look at the word סוכות in the Torah, it's spelled סמך חף תף. כי סוכות הוא גמטריה 480. סוכות is also גמטריה 480, which is גמטריה למד יוד תף, שהוא בקדושה, כי סוכות הוא מכניע לקליפת לשוק גמט 480, וכל הם קיים מצוות סוכה כראוי, ומבטל כוח או ממשלה של ליטה רשעה. וואו. So therefore, the מדבר סוכה, on Kippur, don't have to worry about anything. But after Kippur, now she comes back. So therefore, how do we מבטל for another week or two? We build the סוכה, סוכות כתיב חוסר וב, סוכות סגימטי הלילית, in order to make the ביטול. Okay, so that's great כוחות. ולכן נראה לי, כיוון שביום הכיפורים אין לו סתם לשום שליטה על ישראל, על כיפור, they don't have any say. ותקף על יום כיפורים בפן לקטרק מעדה של ישראל, why they have to keep on starting again their business. ולכן יוסי קדושים הם עוסקים לזאת סוכות שבגמת 480, תקף אחר יום הכיפורים, כדי לבטל הקדוש של לילה שעה. כי כל מדבר שהוא בגמת 480 מבטל קליפת לילית. That's why we study Gemara. Gemara is called Talmud. Talmud. Talmud is how much? Taf Lamed is 430. Mem is 40. That's 470. And Vav Dalet is 10. Talmud is 480. So anybody studies Gemara, Talmud, also in Bebatel, Pat Shacharit. Pat is 480 again. Yeah. Bread in the morning, Shacharit, Pat Shacharit. All these things that equal 480, that's maybe the secret of the Gaon de Vilna. The Gaon de Vilna said that every instrument has a koach in Shamayim, and the tambourine, he said, is the batil dinin. And now we understand why, because it's called a tof. Tof is tapeh. Tapeh is also 480. So when they bang the tof, they said that you should take the tof and bang it. Tarbakke, boom, 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 you're banging it, that's mevatel the dinim. Basically, I got from the gematria also, that has that koach. So any mitzvah that's like that, the gematria obviously is significant. So the pasuk says, כמו שכתב הרב גלנטי, על הפסוק בישעיה, מלאתי משפט, ואתה מרצחי. דע, שהיו בירושלים 480 בתי כנסיות. לא, זה ברוקלין. In Yerushalayim, there were 480 batei kenesiyot. Just in Yerushalayim, 480 synagogues. Ve'im bet ha-megdash, hayu 421. With the bet ha-megdash, it was 481. Ve'kiminyan mele'ati. Mele'ati is 481. Ve'arach, kishachal ba Yerushalayim, nitkabra lit mahanotea. Ve'ayta oleget b'yisrael am kechon hayam, ve'lachin nitkayim ba'atam merastachim avtonu harabim. So the batei kenesiyot, 481, was able to go above lilit. So therefore, once already the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, so already it balanced and he was able to come along and so the inyan of the same thing. Alkem mitzvat sukkah al yeh kalah be'aynecha ki sukkah kolel shne shemot. As we said, sukkah has two names. What's the two names in sukkah? Well, take the middle two letters of sukkah, it's vav chaf, and you take the outer letters of sukkah, it's samech. Here, the inner letters Vavkap is 26, which is Yudke Vavke. The outer letters is Samneche, which is 65, which is Adanut. Whenever you have the two names Havayan Adanut together, it's a Mituk Adin. Adanut is Midat Adin. Right? Aleph Dalet Nun Yod Otiyot Dina. Dina de Malchuta Dina. That's the judgment. And Yudke Vavke obviously is the ultimate mercy. You put these two names together, like we have in the, somewhere. Right? which Amirichu Shetel, like you say. That means you're taking Hashem's name in the Shekhinah and you're putting it together. You know, one against the other. Yud, Aleph, Hey, Vav, Dalet, Vav, Nun, Hey, you know, you do like that. Intertwine them. That makes what's called Mitu Kadinim, which is the magic number of 91. So when you enter the Sukkah, you're entering, you know, the two Shemot of Kadosh Baruch Hu, Abaya Adanut. That's what the Gemara always says when you go into the Sukkah. Seh Medirat Keva. Seh is 91. Seh. They tell you, go, Seh. Go, and they don't say boil a Sukkah. They say, Seh. Go out into the Sukkah. Seh Medirat Keva. You go out into the Sukkah, because you made amazing to these things over here. Gematria Hashem. הבעיה, מצוות סוכה שוכים אצל קרוב בחותיה, הם נותיקו עמורה לפמליה של מלכי סוכה, גמטריה 91 כמניין מלאך. אז another one there. מלאך also equals 91, so you're giving כוחות to the מלאכי עליון, in order to be militiosion on us, to give us good judgment, ולכן אנו מפללים ופרוס אנו סוכת שלומך. That's what we pray in the prayers every single Shabbat. פרוס עלינו סוכת שלומך, כי בזכות הסוכה שאנו מקיימים אותה יהיה השם שלם וכיסא הכבוד יהיה שלם מה שאין כן בעולם הזה אין השם שלם כתיב גם לקשיה ואין כיסא שלם מה שאין כן לעתיד יהיה השם כיסא שלם. So therefore סוכה is a tremendous כוח to, you know, bring the כיסא to make it complete and things like that. And on Leil Shabbat we said a very very significant drasha from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Alav Shalom. There we said that the prophet writes, "V'sukah tihye letzel yomam." Right, the sukkah's purpose, one of its purposes, is letzel. Sukkah al shem tzchach. Sukkah is the tzchach, Rabbi. Don't kid yourself. You go into somebody's case, oh, this is so permanent over here, look at these walls, made out of concrete, so what? The walls can be made out of kryptonite. Sukkah is not the wall, Sukkah is the schach. I don't care who you are, everybody's schach is the same. Everybody's schach is not cemented in, it's not bolted in, it's just a bunch of slats that are put on the schach, and eventually when it rains, everybody's going to have a leak in their sukkah. I don't care if you're a simple guy or a shul guy. So sukkah al shem tzchach. It's not the walls. The walls mean nothing. Because you need walls to put the tzchach on it. But the walls are not the temporary part of the sukkah is the tzchach itself. And that's why technically if you have this room over here and you, so you had a button that you could push and the ceiling would just move to the side. Put tzchach on it. This is a kosher sukkah, just as much as any kosher sukkah in the world. You come and say, oh, but it's not temporary. Of course it's temporary. You don't live in a house with a, you're not in Gilligan's Island, you're not living in a house with bamboos on your head. Who lives like that? That's the temporariness of it. Not the fact, oh, we have chairs, air conditioned in the sukkah, oh, it's permanent. Nothing yet. Nothing of the sukkah represents the temporariness, only the roof of it. Now, happens to be, we don't live in huts, so we build these temporary huts, so everything is temporary. But technically, the only part that we have to be concerned that's temporary is the roof itself. And some of the yeshivas, the squarer, for example, used to go with the square rabbi, they push a button, or they take it off, the walls off in Jerusalem, in the hotels. The whole atrium turns into a sukkah. You're not going to get a more beautiful, magnificent backdrop of a sukkah. But at the end of the day, if it rains in Jerusalem that day, there's going to be puddles in the lobby of the Waldorf. Okay, what you do? You can't get around that. That's what makes it temporary. So it's the same concept. Anyway, so the shay and the shay, of course, has to come from the sukkah. The sukkah provides the shay. So the pasuk says usukkah tiyeh. The sukkah tiyeh letzel yomam. The sukkah will be letzel to shade yomam. Ulchoreb and for the beating of the sun. Ulkerach balayla and also protect the person from the coldness at night. I guess it's an insulation. Then it says also ulmachseh ulmestor, and it'll also be a machseh and a mestor. Machseh is like a protection, I guess, from animals and things like that. Mizerem umimatar. Mizerim, when the Matan we explained, Zerim we said is like a stream. stream of water. Then it's matar, matar, it's matar. Of course, Abba Sukkot, not going to protect us really from Zerim or Matar. Can it air those Sukkot, you know, they built them in a certain way?
Zerim is a strong stream.
Right, Zerim is a strong stream. Again, that's what Abba's telling you. Either he was talking about the Sukkot that we built on Sukkot, or some they were talking about, you know, other type of Sukkot that they built. Right, when Mashiach comes. So, the purpose of the Sukkah is to protect you from Zerim and Matar. So the Rebbe explained something incredible, and we elaborated on it. The concept of coming out of Kippur is to subjugate yourself to the Tariag Mitzvot. That's the whole purpose of Kippur. You come out of it now, you make teshuvah on everything you did, and now you accept upon yourself that we are the servants of Hashem, and you know, to accept His will. Which is the hardest thing, that you have a boss on top of you, and that the sonenu lasot the sonecha. At the end of Kippur, if you remember, we said, you know, karati becholev aneni asher hokecha etzora. That's basically the takeaway of Kippur. The two words hokecha etzora. I'm accepting your laws. That's it. Hokecha etzora. You have to say that seven times, drill them into your skull. That's it. I got the message of Kippur. Hokecha etzora. I'm following your Lord. Problem is that not the problem. One of the facts of Torah is that it's eternal. It's Lord. Lo yahalif ha'el velo yamir. Dato le'olamim. There's no expiration date on any of the laws of the Torah. The laws of the Torah, you know, stand the test of time. Whether you're living in the generation of 2,000 years ago, or you're living in the modern generation, 2016, Torah is not something that's temporary. That's why the Torah is called Netzach. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one that gave us the Torah. His Midah is called Netzach. Every one of the Tzaddikim have a different Midah. Avraham is Chesed, Yitzchak is Gevuram, Yaakov is Tiferet, Emet, and Moshe Rabbeinu is Netzach. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu referred to Netzach? Because he gave a book that's Netzach. God is eternal as well, and therefore anything that God is going to give us is going to be with His midah as well, eternal. God forbid if somebody comes along and says that the Torah is dated, then that is to say God is dated. If God's book is only relevant in certain times and doesn't have relevance in other times, that means you're saying God is only relevant in certain times, because the Torah is God. God is the Torah. The Zohar HaKadosh says Israel me'olaita kusha b'rikul hadu. The closest thing that we have in order to hold on to God is the Torah itself. The Torah is the brain of God. If a person wants to understand what God is, you have to study it through the eyes of the Torah. So, its laws are eternal. But of course, there's been come throughout the ages, you know, modernists that have dated the Torah. Of course, it's the height of arrogance to come along and think that they're wiser. That's how conservative and reform started. Conservative and reform started that they felt that, you know, a lot of these laws are not applicable today, and they started to, you know, justify them when they came along and said Lo tevadu esh, and they came along, yeah, they didn't want you to make a fire, and they started to explain it. That's only because, you know, in the old days to make a fire was strenuous, you know, you had to rub sticks together. But today you turn on the light, the lantern, it's a big deal. They started to redefine it. Well, you know, it's a slippery slope because it didn't end there. Today, I'm sure the conservative reform will also make a fire if they had to add a stone. It started off with that, but could be that their brains at least a logical justification for it, but there's no justification anymore for what they're doing. Today, there's no Shabbat, there's the whole thing. But by being Matilo Tivaru Esh, basically they just burnt the whole Shabbat into smithereens. And it's like that with all the laws that they took away. Your kashrut doesn't apply today because we have the FAA, or the, not the FAA, that's the plane, the FDA. And the FDA says that all the meat has no trichinosis, and it's, you know, grade AAA. And anyway, that's the only reason why they wanted to eat kosher meat, because in the olden days there was trichinosis and had all these diseases. But today that we have, you know, the government, you know, watchdogs making sure that all the meat is, there's no mad cow disease anymore. So therefore, that doesn't apply also. And the fish, Yeah, you can eat all the fish. The only reason why they didn't eat all the fish is because of salmonella and all the other things. But today we have frigidaires, and therefore, you know, you're not going to get these diseases. So they systematically, they went, you know, one by one, and they took away all these mitzvot. And, you know, they have a new Torah. I don't know if there's too much difference between conservative and reform. Yeah, I don't even know the difference, to be honest with you, exactly. You know, what's the Torah the conservative look like, and what's the Torah the reform look like? I'm not too sure. I can tell you the reform went a drop further, right? It took moments more. So I mean, the conservative is not there yet, you're saying. They're not there. They're on the way to reform. So it's like every conservative comes into a reform eventually. It's a matter of time when you evolve into a reformer.
Like the
Jeep,
like they don't sit together.
Who's that, reform?
No, conservative.
Oh, conservative.
Reform, sure. Like you find conservative rules that they seem, except for that, you would think that you were in a...
No,
you wouldn't think, but whatever. It's
Hakabar Kilah. Yeah. The way Abraham and Sarai, the way Yitzhak and Rivka, the way Yaakov and Bilhav and Zipa. Again, Abraham and Sarai. Baruch Atah Hashem, again, Abraham and Sarai. Okay. Basically, a bunch of henpecked men that opened up a temple. Anyway. Your wife told you to say that, right? So anyway, that's what happened. That type of stuff unfortunately creeps in the modern Orthodox world as well. You know, that's the danger of the modernizing of Orthodoxy. Not that Orthodoxy cannot be applied in the modern world. Of course, we're all modern Orthodox in that sense. We're all living in a modern world and we're Orthodox. But when you take Orthodoxy and you modernize the Orthodoxy, there's nothing wrong with a person living in a modern world, but to modernize the orthodoxy. Now, again, modernizing orthodoxy means that you're writing to Shuvot how to explain modern inventions in Halakha, then that's a great thing. Chavoya spent his life then in modern orthodoxy. He's trying to put an orthodox Judaism and apply it to modern cases. But if modern orthodoxy means that you take orthodoxy and you not applying Torah rules, you're applying modernity to orthodoxy. There's a big difference. One, we're applying orthodoxy to modernity. They're applying modernity to the orthodoxy. It's a big difference. Who's influencing who? We want the Torah to influence the modern. And the other side says, no, we're going to let the modern influence the Torah. And therefore, you know, they can start, and a lot of them struggle. Like I told you in L.A., the guy got up, the principal in the school, in the religious day school over the high school, and he announced that he's, from the alternate lifestyle guys. And he announced it publicly. He said, you know, that's what I do, and I'm proud of it. And everybody applauded, and they stood up, and he said, we're going to have an open school, and, you know, we're going to be tolerant to all this type of behavior and all that. And then he comes along and says, and I pray for the day that the rabbis will reinterpret, you know, that pasuk in the Torah. So those are the revisionists, you know, that come and reinterpret so that's somebody that wants to delete something. And then you have, you know, people that come and add to the mitzvot. Again, because if you could delete, you can add also. It's not only one way. It's a two-way street. Once when you don't accept the Torah's eternal, you know, element, so just like you can take away from it, you can start making new stuff, new holidays, new priorities, new ideals that are really foreign from Torah. So you have to be careful on both ends, not to delete from the Torah, not to add from the Torah. So we said from the previous Rebbe that when a person comes into the Sukkah on Sukkot, it's one of the few mitzvot that you're totally encompassed in the mitzvah, and primarily your brain enters the sukkah, and it's the brain of a person that needs to become subjugated, that your brain is limited, and you're not going to understand everything, to subjugate your mind to the principles of Torah. And our minds clearly don't compare to the brain of Harambam, or Shlomo HaMelech, or the Avot, or any of the Rishonim, Tanaim, Geonim, and they subjugated themselves, right? Right, our brain's not going to come close to a a fraction of the Ben Ish-Hai's brain, or the Hafez Chaim's brain, or Hakam Ovadia, alav shalom. And all those rabbis, they didn't dare touch the template. They just tried to, you know, explain it and apply it to a modern world. No problem. They tried to explain, how do you explain Shabbat to a microwave? So they applied Shabbat to a microwave. They didn't come along and say, well, now we have microwaves, they never know Shabbat. And they didn't do away with it. They applied it, which is fine. Most of the later books that we have, Rav Moshe Feinstein, all these little books that we have in the later Hacharim Tzitzel Yezer, and Menachat Yitzchak, and all the great rabbis that we study their books, Rav Ben Zion, basically they're taking modern inventions, and they're trying to figure out how the Torah applies to this. And the assumption is when they write these teshuvot is the Torah is going to have an opinion on it. Because if the Torah is eternal, it's got to apply to every single situation. They don't write a teshuvah thinking that they're not going to get an answer. Because the Torah has to have an answer on every single, if it's in this world, and the Torah is the blueprint of creation, it's not going to give you, now it's not going to say the pasuk internet, of course not. But the Torah is like a lab deal. You know, in geometry, you have to know the rules. The postulates, whatever they call the theorems, the geometric theorems. And once you have the geometric theorems, then you can apply them all over the place. You know the theorems are the theorems, and then the application of it is all over the place. And the same thing with the Torah, the rules are the rules, and then they apply it to every single case. They never say, I haven't seen it, and because it doesn't exist. They never ask a question, and the answer is, well, the Torah doesn't talk about this. You'll never see a posek say that. No matter what question, whether it's fertility, you know, questions that are so modern, you know, cloning, you know, all this stuff over there. They say, well, who's thinking about cloning in 2,000 years ago? It didn't exist. And the post came up 30, 40 pages on it. You know, each question's got has an answer. Anyway, so the Sukkah's Kabana is that when you go in, that you're subjugating your mind to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what we said. The two names that Rabbi Kaveh Yashar said over there that the Sukkah represents is Yudke Vavke and Adanut. Well, Adanut represents the God is Adon. Adon HaKol. By the way, Adon HaKol means that there's Adon. Implicitly, if there's an Adon, that means there's an Eved. And Yudke Vavke means Hayah Hovei Yehyeh, which refers to the eternity of the Torah. The Torah is Hayah Hovei Yehyeh. It was, it is, it will be. Unfortunately, to a lot of people, the Torah is Hayah. The Torah remains in the past. You know, in the modern world, most of most of the religion is zecher. We do zecher, you know, in the night of Pesach, they eat a piece of matzah, because their grandmother used to eat matzah. And, you know, twice a year they go to a kosher delicatessen to eat a pastrami sandwich, because that's considered, you know, Jewish food. You know, and once in a while they eat a, you know, piece of gefilte fish, because that represents something Jewish. But that's basically, it's a culinary, it's a gastronomical Jew. It's all, it has to do with, you know, ritual foods and, you know, songs that their grandmother sang and stuff like that. They unravel the whole religion. So the religion is Hayah. It's Hayah. Where we believe that the religion is Hayah, and that Hayah is in the Hoveh. And we also tell our children that in 100 years from now, nothing's going to change. That's what we're investing so much to teach them this religion, because we're so certain that when they get older, it's going to be the same tefillin, it's going to be the same mitzvot, and there's no chance it's going to change. Otherwise, we wouldn't teach our children. You know, nobody's teaching that. I'm not a computer whiz, but I'm sure there was old programming, and there's new programming now. Nobody's learning basic anymore. Exactly. Nobody's going to teach their kids basic anymore because, you know, the language changed. That'd be a waste of time. So you're teaching them a language and you hope will be around when they get older. So clearly we're not going to teach a Torah to our kids if we think that by the time they get, you know, to maturity, that it's not going to have relevance. I told you once that I was at a conference, and the speaker got up and he said something incredible. He says that the New York Times, they did an experiment. They wrote a New York Times, what the New York Times is going to look like in 50 years from now. So they wrote, in addition, the New York Times, and they dated it, you know, 2050. and everybody's writing on science, people are flying, and all the way out stuff that they think the world's going to look like in 2050. So they asked the editor of that edition, is anything in this edition that you wrote, you really think it's going to be, emit, it's going to happen? So they said, nothing except one thing. And they opened the first page and it says, candle lighting in New York, 4:13. Okay. That's not going to change. The candle lighting time in New York is going to be in 50 years on that Friday, 4:13. That we know is going to happen. Everything happens in the paper. We cannot. That means that Judaism has stood the test of time. Everybody knows Jews are going to be lighting candles in 50 years, going to light 18 minutes before sunset. So that's the preservation of Torah, and that's what the purpose of Sukkah is. Why? So the Rebbe said like this. It's to protect us from Zerem, Mizerem, Umim Matar. So he says, we have 248 mitzvot. That's Ramah. When you enter the Sukkah, you're entering with your 248 limbs. Of course, we know the law says you don't leave a limb outside the Sukkah. You're supposed to enter like a mikveh. If even one of your limbs is out of the mikveh, it doesn't count. You know, when the ladies go to the mikveh, they have to make sure even their hair goes all the way down and doesn't float on top of the mikveh. They got to go all the way down. So we explained it as follows. The Sukkah Tiyeletzel Mizerem. Zerem, the Rebbe said, Zayin Resh Mem, which is 247. Zerem, which is one mitzvah shy of 248. Umim Matar. Mim Matar is Mem Mem Tet Resh, which is 249. And therefore, the Sukkah is to protect us from Zerem Umim Matar. It's to protect us from deleting, and it's to protect us from adding. Because the Mezat Sukkah must be done Beramach. It has to be done with the 248 limbs that we enter the Sukkah, which represents the 248 mitzvot. Not to delete, and not. The Torah is good the way it is. You know, you do any. Sometimes when you have a great recipe, that's it. You don't have to change the recipe for apple pie. You know, anybody that came to try to change it only ruined it. You know, like I told you what the doctor said to Rav Shach. When Rav Shach asked him in the hospital, Rav Shach told the doctor what type of car he drives, and he said a Mercedes. He said, "Okay, that's nice." He said, "What was the car you drove before this?" So he said, "There's also a Mercedes." So he said, "Why do you get the same car every time?" So he said, "No, every couple of years Mercedes upgrades the features of the car." So he says, "I think I can afford it, and I like the car, and I like the features." So he says, "You mean in 2 years from now Mercedes is going to make even a better car?" He says, "Yeah, of course." He says, "How can they make it better? They make it sleeker, they add a feature, whatever it may be." So Rav Shach said, "So you tell me the Mercedes gets better every year, or every few years?" He said, "Yes." So Rav Shach tells him, "I want to ask you a question. You're a heart specialist. You spent your whole life studying the human heart. What would you do to make the heart better? If you had to, add a feature to the heart to make it more functional or whatever it may be." So he said, "No, there's nothing you can do to the heart. It's perfect. Anything that anybody would do to the heart, adding to it or taking away from it, will compromise it. It's perfect." So he shocked him. "You just told me the Mercedes gets better every year." So he says, "Rabbi, there's an obvious difference." He says, "The Mercedes is an invention of human beings. Human beings can make things good, but they can never make things perfect. When you make something good, there's always room to make it better. But God, when he makes something, he doesn't make it good. God makes something perfect. He doesn't have to try. It's not trial and error. It's not an experiment. When God makes it, he makes it once. He makes it perfect. And that's it. There's no way you can advance it. And anything you do to advance it, that means you're taking it from perfect and you're making it good. You're going down. You're downgrading." So Rav Shach then came along and said, "The Torah is the product of God, and therefore the product of God is perfect. There's no room for amendments, and that's why, for example, in the Constitution of the United States, they're always making amendments on it. They're always voting, things in, things out. Because as great as the document is, it's a synthetic document. It was made by the framers. And, you know, George Washington was a smart guy. And Jefferson and Hamilton and all these, you know, the Lamedvav Tzaddikim. But they were humans at the end of the day. And therefore, you know, there's room to come along and say, you know, like take away. And that's the document. Whereas in God's document, he writes it once, and that's it. Don't touch the document. The document, just like nobody would play with the human heart, because it's the product of God. So nobody should play with the human, with the Torah, which is obviously a product of God's, wisdom as well. So that's what the Sukkah represents. When you come into the Sukkah, where your whole body comes into the Sukkah, which represents an entirety, comes into the Sukkah, the Ramach, it protects you from Zeren and Mimatar. It protects you from the 247 guys, the guys that try to delete, and from the Mimatar guys, the guys that try to add. So God comes and says, we're not adding, we're not deleting. We're all Kol Kulo Lashem. So that's one of the Kavanot that we said the other night. I've told you many times what Rav Hutner said. I guess it fits in over here. I was recently in Los Angeles, and the guy was taking out the Sefer Torah from the Hechal, some Gibor Hayim, some strong, muscle guy. He took the Sefer Torah and he's carrying it, some of these guys that like to show that, So one of the Persian guys says, Lo b'shamayim, bring it down, you can't see the letters. I thought that was a cute line. Anyway, Rav Hutner explained why we carry the Sefer Torah high. The obvious reason is that everybody can see it. But he explained differently. He said that when people go to London, to the Big Ben, so it's a big clock. So he says everybody thinks that the reason why they put Big Ben so high is so everybody can see it. So that's the simple reason. But the real reason is because if they would keep it low, everybody would come along and change the time. Everybody would come along, they would look at their watch, they would say, oh, Big Ben is fast by 2 minutes. They would slow it down. So therefore they put it high to come along and say, this is the real time. You set your watch to Big Ben. Not Big Ben is set to your watch. This is the official time. Nobody touches it. He says the same thing with the Sefer Torah. If they would carry the Sefer Torah low, everybody would have their eraser with them and say, this mitzvah doesn't apply to me. They would put it in parentheses. They would delete it. And therefore, they would set the Torah according to their time. So if we put it high and we come along and say, you set your life to the Torah. The Torah doesn't change. The Torah is emet. If anything, you change your rhythm to the rhythm of the Torah. We're not giving anybody a chance to, but that's what people do today. For convenience, they come along and, this doesn't apply, and this is not politically correct, and this is not, in a society that gives so much, credence to rights of everybody, so, rights to animals. So therefore, the modernists will come along and say, Shechita should be banned. Because it's, whereas 1,000 years ago, animals had no rights. Who cared about animals? They were animals had nothing. You didn't care. So therefore, nobody cared about Shechita. But now that animal rights take a big, position in politics, so therefore, we got to go to the Torah and delete Shechita. Whereas in the olden days, women's rights were constricted or restricted to a certain degree, right or wrong, but it was. Even in this country, women didn't have a right to vote. Until they had to make an amendment to suffrage to the Constitution that gives women the right to vote. But, so because of that, so a lot of the Torah laws now seem discriminatory in a society that gives, a lot of credence to the woman. Separate seating, what do we have to put in, what do we cattle, you put us in a separate box, a penalty box in the shul, and what is this, the dress code, do we want to dress like men, and why can't we be, so that all these laws in the Torah pose a threat to the modernist that, wants to adopt the new wave of society. So therefore the only way you do it is, you say it doesn't apply, didn't mean it, to change it, take it away, and before you know it, a Torah that was this big turns into the pamphlet they have on the table. It's one page with a few basic laws. And, that's what the Sukkah is coming to tell you. The Sukkah is coming to tell you, Adanut is an Adon, is a Havaya. And the Havaya is Haya over here. It's, the candle lighting in New York City in 50 years from now is going to be the same candle lighting that we've said. There's no changing this. So it's just like there's no change in the human heart. There's no changing anything in God's world. God's world is perfect. God is not good. God is perfection. I told you, I said it on the Pesach trip this year, that when I was in Seattle, so the flight was delayed, so I went into the bookstore, the Barnes & Noble's over there. And if you remember that 10 years ago, there was a craze, a book that came out called The Secret. Mm-hmm. It was a book,
yeah,
a small book, written by some lady, and she claimed that that's it.
Oprah Winfrey.
This is it, exactly. This book over here is going to change your life. It's the secret of life. It's going to bring you happiness and bliss and, you know, ecstasy, whatever. The book claims to give you everything. It'll grow hair on your head. It's an incredible book. The Secret. Oh, you didn't read it. So what happened was, we had a teacher in school. They told them, we set them up. They told him, Mr. So-and-so, we have a joke to tell you. He was bored of that. So the guy tells him, Stu Husney tells him, we have a joke for you. It's so funny, your head's going to fall out. So I say, you heard it already. So this book over here was, it's going to answer all your problems. And everybody's looking for an answer. And some cure-all. You couldn't get the book. The book was back ordered. That's how many books they printed. Everybody and his grandmother was walking around with this book underneath, like a Daffy or me, quoting it. The author herself, you couldn't get her to speak. She was so busy running around the country speaking about the book. And like you said, Oprah and all these shows and private functions. I mean, so this was many years later. So I was in the airport. I said, go see what happened. Now, I wonder what happened to that book over there. So I go into the store. I said, yeah, I have a book called The Secret. So right away she doesn't know it's about the book. So right away that means it's not on the bestseller list anymore. She goes to the computer. Oh, yeah, sir. Yeah, over there. You go over there, they have a big bin. It says over here, 80% off. A big bin of Ginza. All the Ginza books that they put in that bin over there. And in there, you got to dig in there. They give you a shovel. You got to dig in there. You'll find maybe a few copies of the book over there. And if you buy it, you get a free cup of coffee with every purchase of that book. They can't give the book away. They got to incentivize you to take the book. I think somebody said, this book was going to save humanity. And now it's in the Ginza section in Barnes & Noble, the bottom of the barrel. And they're discounting the book. It's taking up space. So then I went back to the lady. I said, I have one more question. Do you have the Jerusalem Bible? Oh, this is right over there. And you see a big podium, and you see the Jerusalem Bible open, and on top it says, bestseller, Mr. Bashemo. Jerusalem Bible, 2,500 years later, still the bestseller in every bookstore. It still finds its way, every library in the world. Whereas these books over here, they're sad. It's like the latest diet. It's the latest gimmick, get rich quick scheme. The guy writes a book and everybody reads it, and that's go back to the old principles of life. There's no get rich scheme, there's no schemes, there's no nothing. You gotta go the old way, there's trident principles and all that. So the same thing when it comes to this. But again, to the guy who doesn't believe in the eternity of the Torah, well, the Torah is they'll talk about it. It's the same argument amongst the amazing thing, the arguments that we have in society. And our religious society regarding the Torah, in the secular world, they have the same arguments regarding the Constitution. You can draw a lot of parallels between the way the secularists look at the Constitution. That's their Torah. So on the Supreme Court, you have two types of judges. You have one type of judge that is a judge that believes in the tradition of the Constitution, mm-hmm. and that it shouldn't change. It is what it is, and then you have those that believe that the document is breathing. They call it a breathing document. It's a way of saying
it reads with society and it morphs and it changes and it becomes whatever you want it to become. They wrote it, but they didn't mean what they wrote. They meant that any society that comes, you could just define it. It's interesting that same machloket that talks in the Constitution, how to interpret it. And yeah, like the few judges that looked at it, but the majority of the judges look at it in society today as a breathing document. That's the purpose. So that ideology permeates into Torah philosophy. Most of the judges today are liberal. They won't interpret the Constitution the way it was written. They'll add new kavanot to it that clearly the framers or whatever that they wrote it had definitely not have it in mind today. They'll vote in the court that the death penalty is considered a cruel and unusual punishment, because the Torah says, the Constitution says, that the government is not allowed to do cruel and unusual punishment. So they come along and they vote that the death penalty is considered cruel and unusual. Now, how could that be? At the time that they wrote the Constitution, the death penalty was legal in every state. That was the punishment for a felony. If a person committed a felony, the punishment was the death penalty. The guy stole the law to give them the death penalty. That was the crime. That was the punishment for a felony. How could it be that you're going to tell me that their kavanah was that this is cruel? If you're somebody that believes in the tradition of it, that's not what they meant. You read it literally, not literally, but with a proper understanding. But if you believe the thing is breathing, changes and all that. Now I don't care the consequences. I have no nafkaminot. It doesn't bother me. Whether you're a strict interpreter or you're a liberal interpreter, to me it doesn't make no nafkamina whatsoever. Maybe it's a more because you're a lawyer makes a difference, but to me it makes no difference. But when you come to the Torah, you have to explain it according to what the intent of the Creator was. You cannot come along now and start saying that certain things don't apply anymore. The church, there's big pressure on the church to get rid of the pesukim that talk about homosexuality and things like that. To come along and say, nobody has a right to do that. No matter, if they're in Rome or wherever.
They did already.
Yeah.
They got rid of all of them.
Yeah, they got rid of it. So I guess they add this to the list. Add this to the list. Again, it's very important to know that, Rabotai. Me'idi said it the best when he said that the emet is very heavy. That's why very few people can carry it. Anything that's emet is heavy. Emet is heavy. And that's why not too many people can carry it. Mm-hmm. So the emet is, the Torah's emet is heavy. So to take the Torah, put it on your shoulders, you have to have broad shoulders to be able to carry all its truth. Much easier to throw out some luggage, throw out some excess that you don't think is applicable, and the Torah becomes lighter. Only problem is not Torah Temet anymore. It's Torah Met. You took away the Aleph. Now it's Met. Now you took a Torah that's called Torah Chaim, a living document, and once you take out one organ of the Torah, it's Torah Met. You've taken away the life of it. Just like in a body, certain organs, you take it out, it's the body's not convinced, and then obviously are vital. Anyway, that's the message that we said on Friday night, that the purpose of Sukkah is to protect you mizeren or mimatar. The zeren from the 247 guys, and the mimatar guys from the 249 guys. So that, like we said, it's like the old Samsonite luggages. The old Samsonite luggages, if you remember, they had the code, on the side. And exactly. And it came with a little ticket, and it tells you the numbers. And you have to get the number exactly. I mean, sometimes you type in the number and it wouldn't open. And you see, because you got it in the middle, you didn't get the, it's between the 5 and the 6. You didn't get it perfectly. So then you move it to the 6, bink, and it clicks open. So the code that our Torah comes with is 613. That's the code. Any other code is not gonna work. If you type in 614, the Torah is not going to open up. And if you type in 612, the Torah is not gonna work as well. I think I've heard it. I forget from who I heard it from. in this Mir Yeshiva, when they came here, obviously this is a branch of the Mir Yeshiva that was in Poland and then in Shanghai. So this is like the replanting of that yeshiva here in I don't know the details of it, but they in Mir they had a certain standard of schedule, what time they pray, what time they learn, what time they eat lunch, what time they it's all written as a tradition, that's the way they do it. They came here, for whatever reason, there was a discussion to change the schedule a little, what time lunch is. To us, what do we think was not such a big deal? Change the schedule. The schedule changes all the time. I think one of the rabbis told me that the Shei Yeshiva sat for 3 days in, conference, not 24 hours a day, but meetings after meetings, before they would change the schedule of, when lunch was. And what's the logic? Because they believed that whatever was done in the previous had a certain kavanah, and you don't just come in. Now, that's already responsible. Now, there's no law that says you can't change the lunch schedule in Mir Yeshiva. But if you have that attitude, you're not going to change the... If you're hesitant to change the schedule of the Mir Yeshiva because they did it in the you're not touching this. Yeah, that's a proper attitude. But, an attitude that's liberal that just comes along and says, so what, we did it this year, change it this way. Be very careful. Because once you have that easy attitude to just, change stuff that... Once precedent doesn't mean anything... So then you have no, and that's why it seems that always in our religion we're always mentioning Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, and that's what the sukkah does. Who comes to the sukkah? We don't invite some modern guests. The guests are the old tradition of Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov. That's a lesson as well. That our religion is based on the old. Based on the precedent that those tzaddikim set up. In conclusion on this thought, we always explain the Mishnah Pirkei Avot. Mishnah Pirkei Avot said that you have the Torah is compared to old wine in a new flask. So the Mishnah compares to Yayin Yashan Bekankan Hadash. Old wine and new flask. Now, there's a lesson in that. The flask that the wine is in, we don't care how new it is. As long as it's carrying old wine inside, that's the main thing. What we're worried about is if you have an old flask with new wine in it, that has little value. Which means the new flask represents the modern world. It's a new flask, kankan hadash. It's new situations, new, modernity, as they call it. But as long as you have old wine that's in the new flask, you have no problem. Because the old wine is gonna dictate. That's the main thing. So nobody's worried about new flasks. We're worried about new wine. That's what they're interested in. We're interested in, Yain Yashan. Kankan Hadash, so what? It takes on an application in the Kankan Hadash, no problem. We don't care if the old wine is in the prism of Kankan Hadash. The problem is these guys, they're emptying out the old wine. They want Yain Hadash, but Kankan Hadash. They're taking the new wine that never existed before, and they're changing it. So therefore, part of the Inyan of the Sukkah is to come along and say, Mizerem or Mimatar. I don't, and the Benish Chai said it beautifully when he said, this Tariyat Mitzvah. So he said, Kol HaMosif Goreya, which is, we know that already. If you can add, eventually you're going to delete. It's a two-way street. People come up and say, what's the difference? I don't want to add. The adding shows you that the document is not perfect. So once one day you'll add, and tomorrow you'll be in the mood to delete. So he says, 613 is Tariyag. How much is 614? Tafresh Yudala, which is what Torid. So he says by adding 614 is Torid. And then he says that when you delete from the
the Torah. So the what's it called? The Hatam Sofer used to say like this: Oseh Hadashot Baal Milhamot. Anybody that comes to do something new, like a novelty, Oseh Hadashot Baal Milhamot. You're coming to wage war. So he said, who is he waging war against? You're waging war against God. Because God said, this is the law. Or say hadashot, you're going to come start making new things? Baal Muhammad, you're waging, it's like the people of the Dora Palaga. We always come along and say, what are these people crazy? They built a tower in order to fight God? What kind of stupid people? We're going to build a tower, a skyscraper in order to scale it, in order to fight God? Who would do such a thing? Well, today the modern person does the same thing. He's fighting against God. He comes along and takes his Torah, he comes along and says, delete this, delete that. So you're fighting a war against God. It's God against the person. And he would say again, what the Shulchan Aruch writes in the laws of the Kemach Yashan, Hadash Asubin HaTorah. And anything that's Hadash, something that's new, Asubin HaTorah. In that sense, he meant something that's new outside the realm. And he would say that there are 70 interpretations of the Torah. I'm worried about the 71st interpretation. That's the one that concerns me, because that's the answer to all these guys. Oh, there's 70 interpretations. There are 70 Shivim Panim of Torah. No problem. It's Shivim Panim. But not Shivim Vahat. That's the one that they're trying to push in to make the 71 mainstream. And the 71 is not mainstream. So the Bein Ishchai says, when somebody deletes from the Torah, you have 612. How much is 612? Tafresh Yudvet, which is what? Tarim. Tarim is you're fighting. You're waging a war against God. So either you're Tarim, you're fighting against God by deleting and establishing Baal Milhamot, or Torim by adding, because the guy who adds comes, what do you want? Being Mahmir. I have the 615, plus. The plus, then plus. Plus becomes a minus. You're in the mood today to be Mahmir, and you're in the mood today to become. Anyway, that's one of the names.